Welcome to Live, Let, Thrive, a podcast about the Airbnb life, the share economy, and everything in between. Here are your hosts, Micah and Steve.
Hello, hello, hello.
And welcome back to another exciting episode
of Live,
Let, Thrive.
What's up, Micah? Man.
I am chilling, Stevie Stacks. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Excited to get into today's podcast. It's been a long week. Friday's here. I'm ready to unwind, have a little fun, and have some fun on my wife's birthday today. So it's going to be a cool day. Podcast straight into birthday night.
Happy birthday to Lupita. Let's go.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, this is episode 254 of your favorite Airbnb, VRBO, short-term, mid-term, long-term rental podcast in the world, coming at you from Fort Worth and Arlington, Texas.
Yes, sir. And who we got today, Steve?
We got a special guest, a Mr. Joe Riley has joined us. Who's Joe Riley? Well, he has an impressive resume from what he wrote here. Joe Riley founded Patriot Family Homes in 2018 to meet the need for affordable, reliable housing in the South, particularly near military bases. Until 2021, Joe was an infantry officer in the Army. Thank you for your service, sir. He deployed to Afghanistan and Ukraine and served as director on the National Security Council at the White House. After leaving the Army in 2021, Joe rapidly grew Patriot Family Homes from 100 houses to 400 houses as of January 2023. An East Tennessee native, Joe and his wife, Rachel, moved home to Chattanooga with their two boys, Jacob and Jonah. They live on a working farm just outside of Chattanooga, which doubles as Patriot headquarters. Joe earned a BA from the University of Virginia and a master's and doctorate in international relations from Oxford University as a Rhodes Scholar. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Man.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well decorated.
Yes, sir. Very well decorated. Man, I don't know where to start. There's so much to go over. Yeah, let's start with the company, man. What made you get into this part of real estate? And what exactly, you say 100 homes to 400 homes, what exactly, what part of real estate is this?
Yeah, so we're all short-term rentals, mainly in single-family homes, but we do an increasing number of multifamily as well. We've actually launched a bed and breakfast concept, some tiny homes, tree houses concept, and some multifamily. So, you know, kind of spread throughout. But I was in the Army, deployed in Afghanistan. My wife works for McKinsey, so kind of travels through the week and needed something to do with the house while I was gone. So threw it up on Airbnb and HomeAway and realized, no surprise, there's a big need for furnished short-term accommodations around military bases. And so came back and, you know, actually moved my wife and I into one bedroom of our three bedroom house, and then started renting out the other two rooms. So my wife's a saint to deal with that. And then, started buying other houses, fixing them up, flipping them, and then, you know, setting them up as Airbnbs and refinancing them, and kept on going. And so we're now up to we'll soon be over 500 homes, and we're concluding a pretty substantial merger or acquisition of a bunch of contracts that'll hopefully take us north of 750 homes within the next month or so. So we're moving relatively fast.
Wow, to say the least. Oh man, first of all, it's a lot there. But first of all, why is there such a need for furnished short-term rentals near military bases?
Families constantly coming and going, and so, you know, whether it be coming in to watch somebody graduate from basic training, or whether it's, you know, military families like my wife and I moved, I think, 7 or 8 times in 8 or 9 years. So, you know, families constantly on the move and going from place to place, and that creates the need for temporary housing as they wait on their permanent place to stay. So,
Question for you, because wow, that is a impressive portfolio, and I love the military family strategy as well. I do that right outside the Little Rock Air Force Base. Now these homes, because you said you're up to 500, you're about to get up to 750. Are these places you manage, places you own, or arbitrage, or all three, or what's your portfolio look like?
We do all three. The majority of the current portfolio is owned through an affiliated series of propcos, but we do third-party management, and a lot of what we're acquiring in this next big tranche will be third-party management, and then we do have rental arbitrage as well.
And what do you guys see as the best return out of those three models?
Oh, it just depends on the asset, right? So, you know, if, you know, arbitrage works well on some properties, particularly bigger, larger properties in downtown cores, mm-hmm. Management tends to work best when you have consolidated owners, you know, because it's then less, you know, headache for, you know, if you can get one owner with 10 properties, they're as no more trouble, if not less trouble sometimes than the one property and one owner. Not trouble, but just, you know, in terms of time that you have to spend getting them comfortable. And then, you know, for kind of buying homes, it's often your kind of run of the mill homes that do really well. So.
And so. So it's interesting. In your bio, you said you to provide affordable and reliable homes, right? I guess to military families.
Correct.
So, because whenever we talk on this show a lot, you know, and we have people on, we're trying to get the biggest bang for the buck out of a furnished rental. Now, is there a different model? Because I assume, well, the government helps pay their rent, and so you can't really try to maximize the amount you can make on these houses. How does that work?
No, I would, you know, most of the time the government's not paying it. You know, we are, you know, we're just, you know, we're working with them directly. They just happen to be a military family. So the government, you know, maybe one day we'll try to contract with the government, but, you know, that's a whole nother can of worms to open up. Right now we just work directly with the you know, guest, and you know, obviously, you know, we kind of, you know, start, you know, guests come back and stay with us and word of mouth and stuff like that. But, you know, like most people, still a large volume of our traffic's coming from the OTAs. But it's, you know, we're in military markets that have a heavy density of military travel.
Okay, that makes sense. I just yeah, because it's not like you know, someone that's in the military that's going to rent it for like months at a time. It's just for short periods of time.
Correct. Yeah, we're still, you know, even when we rent to military families, it's often a month or less stay. So
okay. So how are you able to pick up, first of all, 100 properties? How do you do that? I mean, we're trying our best to pick up a handful, you know, but how the hell did you get 100 properties?
You know, bought stuff that needed some work and fixed it up, and then, you know, refinanced it out, and then was able to get a couple, you know, loans that would work off of cash flow and stuff. And so just, you know, kind of, you know, buy low and do a good job renovating them, and then, you know, fill them out, you know, fill them with guests and hopefully do a good job and rinse and repeat.
So there's 400 in your, well, it's going on 500, but, and you said there's a mix. So how many of them are actually owned?
Probably 300 or so are owned.
Jeez.
And then probably 60 or so arbitrage and 70 or so third party managed, or, you know, somewhere, you know, there are 75 third party managed and 70 or 75, you know, arbitrage, somewhere in there.
Okay. So let's hop into the weeds of that. So you have 500 short term rentals, that's 500 turnovers, whatever. How are you managing that? Like, what's your PMP? How do you manage all of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got a team. I think we're up to about 90 or so employees, full-time, you know, employees. And then we've got a, obviously 1099 staff who do cleaning and other things like that. So we've got an awesome team, mainly military spouses and veterans who work, but a lot of other folks as well. So yeah, we've just got a great team and built up a management company to do that and got different departments to do different things. So
Do you just, since you're on mostly the OTAs, do you just get, you manage everything just through like Airbnb, or what OTAs are you using?
Airbnb, VRBO, Booking, Expedia, TripAdvisor, Hopper, Marriott, PCS Cities, we've got Furnace Finder, or you know, then there's a ton of different, you know, more niche sites. So
okay. Oh, okay. And you don't use like a property management system to manage any of that?
No, yeah, we do. We use our back end is we use Guesty.
Guesty? Wow. Okay. Man, it's a lot of property.
What do you use?
Well, I'm currently using Hostfully. Okay. That's what I've used to manage mine, but man, Guesty, that's what I would tell people, mostly use either Guesty or Hostfully to manage a portfolio of that size.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm just interested in the purchasing side. So do you utilize the VA loans? Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, we use some VA loans. Some of our clients use VA loans. We don't use VA loans because you can only have one VA loan. And so that's intended for people's personal residence. Now, the way several veterans will be able to, and this is pretty common in the military, somebody will buy a house. You know, I moved to get stationed at Fort Campbell, so I buy a house in Clarksville. And then a year or two later, the Army moves me to, you know, Fort Bragg. So now I'm stationed in Fayetteville. So then I'll use my, you know, VA loan to buy a home there, right? Because the VA acknowledges that the military is obviously moving you around. And so, you know, you can't buy a vacation home with your VA loan, but you can buy a home that you live in. And then when you PCS again, you can buy another home, right? Now there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more nuance to it than that, but that's generally the way, you know, we've seen people do that.
Okay. And then I know you said you use the, basically you're saying you use the Burr method, right? You're buying them. Yeah. Refinancing them. Now, are you still using that method in today's market? And if not, like, when were you using it? Like, was it a couple of years ago, or are you still using that method?
We still buy stuff that needs rehab work. You know, now, in many ways, now is more important than ever to do that because, you know, prices have gone up so substantially.
Okay. And then are you still like refinancing them into traditional loans, like with the, you know, the higher interest rates, or how's that working out?
So we have a variety of loan products. I mean, we have, we have some lines of credit. This is a little bit unique to us. I mean, we raised in this last PropCo round, we raised $60 million to go, you know, buy another, you know, 150 million, 140 million or so worth of homes. And so, you know, we're using some pretty large warehouse facilities to put those on. That wasn't what we started doing, but that's what we do now.
Wow.
So you utilize investors then to help you buy these homes.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work?
Variety of different ways. You know, we have a couple different PropCos, and you know, those PropCos, you know, some of them are smaller owners who have them.
So real quick, could you explain what a PropCo is? This is the first time I've ever heard that term. Sorry.
Okay. So in a lot of real estate structures, you'll have what's called OpCo PropCo. So you'll have an operating company that provides all of the actual property management services, all of the activity, that's where everyone works. And then you'll have PropCos, and people who invest to buy homes, you know, they own the PropCos. And the reason you do that is because, you know, the PropCos are very bankable, obviously, because they hold, hard assets in the form of homes. And so it's easy to get leverage and financing on that. And secondly, it's just that, you know, if you're looking for investors or debt, you know, capital partners, debt or equity, and it's very different return profiles and risk profiles to be investing in the homes themselves versus the operating company, which is higher risk, higher reward, lower capital. So when we say OpCo, PropCo, we talk about who are the entities that are going and buying the homes. Those are PropCos. And then who are the entities that are operating the homes and we're getting paid a management fee to do that? That's OpCo.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah. Like I said, the first time I ever heard that. So, yeah, man. So, you settled, you're from Tennessee, you settled there and you have most of your properties there.
No, actually most of our properties, our biggest two states are Georgia and Alabama.
Oh,
mm. Now are you on the coast in Alabama or?
We are on the coast in some areas, and then we're up in several other markets throughout Alabama.
Okay. So in a place like Alabama, because I tell people all the time, anything east of Texarkana, Texas, you're going to need short-term rentals, right? So are you finding more success in like the places on the coast or the places that are inner city in like a rural market like Alabama?
So we typically buy more in cities is okay. Historically what we've done.
Okay, gotcha.
That makes sense. All right, this is a lot of info. So how were you able to start doing this while you were in the military? Where did you have the time to do all this?
I just didn't sleep for a couple of years. No, I mean the most productive time when I was building the company was actually I was deployed in Ukraine. And, you know, the Ukrainians would wrap up most days around 2 o'clock in the afternoon with their training, which was, you know, about 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, U.S. time. And so then I would plug in and I'd work till like two o'clock in the morning or so Ukrainian time, work through a full day. And that was really, you know, a kind of critical period in helping getting everything up and running.
See that? Listen, our fans want to hear that right there because there's no excuses to hustle. He's hustling over there in a war zone after hours. And people are, you know, a lot of people complain about, oh, there's not enough hours in the day. Man, dude, never mind. You get out there and hustle. That's crazy, man. So you were out there, if I could ask, in the Ukraine, were you helping train soldiers? And what all are you doing over there?
Yes. So we were working with their soldiers and helping them, you know, this was back before Russia invaded, but they were still fighting out east. And so we were helping them, you know, get prepared to go do it, you know, to go fight. So we, you know, train them and help them, you know, learn different tactics, whether it be at the smaller unit level or up at the staff level. And, you know, so that was kind of what we did for a while.
Wow. I mean, I'm just, yeah, it's not to get off topic of the real estate, but man, it's just, what do you think about the whole mess over there?
I mean, it's a mess. I mean, I've been very happy to see how well the Ukrainians have done of kind of defending their homeland and standing up to Russian aggression. You know, I think it's, you know, sad and terrible and, you know, yet in some ways unsurprising to see what Putin and Russia have done. But, you know, the Ukrainians have put up an incredible fight. So, and kudos, you know, they're defending their homeland. So.
Why is it so important for like us or other countries to help the Ukraine against Russia?
I think it's just that, you know, it's important to, you know, make sure we take a stand when, you know, we're, you know, you know, telling, you know, demonstrating that, you know, we're not going to allow other countries to, you know, invade and, you know, demolish the kind of freedoms and rights and even basic, you know, basic life necessities, the way that the Russians have. So.
Wow. That's sorry to get off topic a little bit. It was in your bio and I was like, wow, Ukraine. You know, I don't know enough about the situation. I've heard both sides, both arguments, and to have someone that was actually there and your opinion is very valuable to us.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
All right. So back to real estate.
Real estate is not being pummeled by Russian bombs.
Exactly. That type of, woo, we don't know how lucky we have it here in this country.
Although, you know, one of the best ways that people have been able to get money to folks in Ukraine is through Airbnb. Because people in Airbnb, you know, that you list, they list their house for rent or apartment for rent. People then book the house, right? And it's like a international funds transfer, right? Because they don't actually go stay there, but you know, you can, people in Ukraine can list their house for rent, and somebody in Germany or the UK or the US or wherever else that wants to support them, you know, rents their house. They don't actually go there, but then the funds get transferred.
That's awesome.
And what happens if someone actually shows up with their bags? Hey, you know, I rented this
probably
place.
Probably throw them a rifle and tell them that, you know, time to go.
Airbnb experiences, right? Just get it. Grab you again.
Yeah, that'll be a new Airbnb experiences, you know, fighting international invaders. So
but people that would do that.
Near death experiences, man.
So okay, you are a road scholar. You go into that a little bit, because I mean it's a cool resume. And the only, you know, road scholar comes to mind, I think of like Bill Clinton, and he became president. And he was a Rhodes Scholar, so like you could be a president, dude.
You could be a president. Everybody can be a president.
Well, there's, yeah,
way more presidents who've not been Rhodes Scholars than ones who have. So,
yeah, that's true. Be a reality TV star and become.
They say Rhodes Scholars are people with a bright future behind them. So,
that's pretty funny. So, yeah. So you're a smart. Smart dude, and just surveying the landscape, you figured that real estate was the best way to make the most money in the quickest manner, I assume.
I don't know if it's the easiest or the quickest. It seems that, you know, technology companies and some others, you know, everybody's business is easier than yours. You know, it's like, you know, every time somebody tells me one of their business, you know, how they're, I'm like, man, I just wish I had that business. That business seems like it's so much easier than mine. And I'm sure that, and they did the same with me. They're like, man, I just wish, you know, I had an Airbnb business. That'd be so much easier than running a, you know, Domino's chain or something like that. That, like, everybody's business is hard. So
I guess to get to, you know, you went in your bio 100 to 400. Now you're over there, you know, getting to 500, and you'll be at 750 soon. You must have some pretty sound systems. I mean, does the military help you, military experience help you develop these systems?
It was really helpful for sure. You know, we hire a lot of veterans who are coming in, and oftentimes they'll be like, oh, you know, I'm great at, you know, creating systems. And I'm like, nah, you know, people in the military, and look, I was, you know, like to think they were entrepreneurs and be like, no, I created this from scratch. I created this. And I'm like, you worked in the most bureaucratized organization, you know, literally 200 years of systems development and process development. Like, everybody goes to the same courses, speaks the same language, has a unified rank structure, has common terminology. Like, you know, even when you think you're innovating, you're actually just refining, you know, processes on the margins. Whereas like starting your own company, building a short-term rental portfolio is truly white sheet of paper. How do we do this? You know, start from scratch. So we have to, once they kind of acknowledge that and kind of get that through, then yes, you know, the military does a great job of teaching you how to, you know, how do you build teams? How do you structure teams? How do you create repeatable processes? The other challenge we have with folks who are coming from the military is that, you know, thanks to the taxpayers of America, if you're a military leader and you're like, I've got a problem, you know, the first thing you need is like, I need more people. And, you know, if you have to like balance the budget and you have a problem, you know, so what I tell people is, you know, if we have a problem, we don't need more people. We need a better process, you know, and once we've got the process in place, then we'll talk about if we need more people. Because if you throw more people into a bad process, you're going to have more problems, not, you know. So
love that.
Yeah.
So I guess while you're scaling your business, what are some of the best way, or what are some of the biggest like bottlenecks you've been able to get rid of along the way?
Oh, bottlenecks. Well, when COVID hit, we had a huge supply chain issue with obviously furniture. And so it was taking us longer to get homes live. And so my grandfather runs a Christian rehabilitation center for men leaving prison and recovering from drug and alcohol addiction. And so, and he'd been a carpenter before he did that. And so I went, I was like, look, let's, let's just build a wood shop. And you get lots of guys coming out of prison that need to learn a new skill. And let's have them manufacture a lot of our furniture. So then they started building our furniture. And then I was like, well, now we've got to warehouse the furniture, right? So then we, you know, and we had problems with shipping. So we had to, you know, we started using my grandfather's barn, and now we're in warehouses and stuff. But then we, you know, now we got to get it shipped there. So we had to buy our trucks and trailers, right? And then you, you know, had to work with freight brokers. And so, you know, it's constant refinement of processes.
You're definitely the first guest we've ever had, short-term rental guest, that has built and shipped their own furniture, man. That is nuts. That's a way to solve a problem right there. Hey, I can't get no furniture for 3 months. I'm gonna build it myself. None of us have ever thought of that.
Yeah. And even better, when we so then it was like, well, you know, where do you get the wood, right? Because then there was a wood shortage. So we approached a couple companies locally that have tractor trailers. And we then would get the flooring out of used tractor trailer beds and then use that. So it's like reclaimed wood, and it's sturdy. I mean, you cannot break this furniture. You can take a sledgehammer to it, and because it's literally designed for tractor trailer beds. Wow. Then it was free, right? So then the wood was free. And so we get furniture at a significantly discounted cost. So
I know what you mean by that. Cause like, you know, where I was working at a warehouse, we trucks, you know, tractor trailers would back up and unload and load. And we'd go on there with forklifts on these panels of wood. They're strong as hell. So, yeah. So I can imagine the furniture being strong as hell as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. So how were you able, because obviously you can't, I mean, to grow it this big and getting bigger, you know, how were you able to pull yourself out of daily operations?
Have I pulled myself out of daily operations?
you did say you're, it was a busy day today, or you were swamped or something.
I'll let you know when I pull myself out of daily operations. I'll let you know. We've got an awesome team, and we hired a Christian Hempel ran all, you know, Sonder.
Mm-hmm.
So Christian ran all of Sonder's North American operations, and we hired him away from Sonder to come and run our, he's our president and COO. So he runs all of our internal operations and, you know, does, you know, and then we've got, one of our employee number one, Kate Hami, you know, started out as kind of customer service rep and has grown all the way up through the company. And she's now our chief growth officer. And so she oversees all our acquisitions, renovations, installing the FF&E in the homes, owner recruitment. And then Luke Brennan's our chief strategy officer. And he, you know, was a BCG, you know, then went to Duke Business School, back to BCG. So he's got a great hospitality background, photographic memory, which is super helpful. We've just hired a new CFO who started a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, has real estate background from a finance standpoint. So we've got an awesome team, and they truly do make the train run on time every day. And I just usually create more problems than I help whenever I get involved. So
now, question for you, what year did you guys start?
So we had our first Airbnb in 2018. In 2019, when we started 2019, we just had four or five. And so we've, you know, grown pretty quickly.
Wow. So you guys went to 500 and from four, basically 4 years now, 5 years. That is crazy. Wow. That is crazy.
Our goal is to be at 1,000 by the end of the year. So we have gone from, you know, four or five to 1,000 in 4 years or so.
Okay. And with you going from your goal is to get to 1,000. So do you guys have like a portfolio goal? Like, hey, we want to own this many, manage this many, arbitrage this many, or are you just like, let's just get 1,000 up?
Yeah. We'd like to buy a couple more hundred this year, probably another 100 or two, you know, probably 200 or so this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest will come through management and arbitrage.
Love that. Okay. And so with you, actually, because how you're buying low, fixing them up, putting them back on Airbnb, these interest rates, and I guess you guys are doing, because if you're doing all short term, you guys got to do some really good market research. And plus, you guys are probably dominating the market. When you're going and doing this, you're not really worried too much about like these higher interest rates, or you're just like, oh, well, we'll make the money on the back end because it's a short term rental anyway.
I mean, we still fight for interest rates. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, so interest rates are brutal right now. There's no doubt about it. So that's a big focus for us, is how we try to control our rates in a, you know, and deciding what lock periods we want to have, what prepayment penalties we want to have. So a lot of that stuff are big question marks for us.
Okay.
Do y'all do any creative financing at all?
What do you mean by creative? what's the threshold?
So something that comes to mind, and it's a buddy of ours from the show, Adam James. I don't know if you know Adam James, ex-military dude, and he's out in Tennessee. Adam Johnson. My bad. He's out in Tennessee, right? And he buys houses from military families, subject to. And he, like you said, they move, you know, sometimes they get, you know, stationed somewhere else. They have this house they bought. They don't have a lot of equity or any equity into it sometimes. And he's able to buy these houses subject to, and then, you know, he turns them into Airbnbs himself. He has like 20 or so properties. Anyways, that's the only way he'll never deal with banks again. That's the only way he's going to ever buy houses in the future is subject to. So that's what I meant. Yeah. By creative financing.
Yeah, I'd be interested to learn more.
I'll link y'all up. Yeah. Okay. It'd be great. Yeah. A great meeting of the minds.
That's right.
But do you know the gist of subject to?
So they're assuming them?
Yeah, yeah. So
the mortgage.
Taking over the deed. The mortgage stays in the original, you know, buyer's name, but you take over the deed and you take over the payments and they go about they go on their way, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much that.
Yeah, I haven't looked. I mean, that'd be interesting for sure to pursue and see, learn some more about that.
Especially if they got locked in at, you know, 3 or 4% interest rates.
Yeah, sure.
Beautiful. Anyways, so I'm gonna link y'all up. Y'all both ex-military, both in Tennessee. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So
yeah, I was great. Adam, when you said you were military in Tennessee, that's all I was thinking. I'm like, oh, he's out there with Adam. Okay.
That's right.
Pour some gas on the fire, right? Man, this is really cool how you're able to scale, and I like how you recognize. I mean, you went after the dude from Sonder. I mean, that's, you recognized you needed somebody with a lot of experience, and you landed a big fish. That's pretty crazy.
You know, speaking of that, Steve, like, how would you go? How would one person go and find someone like who used to work at Sonder to hire into their business, especially someone who's over operations of all of North America?
Well, there's a lot of people who worked at Mikasa and Sonder and Avanste and others that are looking for jobs. So, yeah. LinkedIn, you know, no secret there. So,
yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I'm not in LinkedIn. I have a profile. I need to get on there. Mike is always saying that it's crucial to get on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Great.
And yeah, man, so this is cool. This is y'all keep growing. You got investors. How do you find investors to help y'all grow?
You know, most of our investors are now kind of larger investors, and just word of mouth. And you know, we'd like to think, hopefully we've done good jobs for folks and they introduce us to other people, and we go there. Sometimes people reach out to us. Maybe they heard us on a podcast or something and want to learn more information. But for the most part, we're working with larger, you know, kind of investors. But we love working with smaller investors as well.
Okay. So you guys are using more private money?
Yeah.
Okay. This is one thing I'll throw out there, especially for people listening right now. How would you one approach someone to acquire private money for like an Airbnb investment? Are you presenting like the Airbnb numbers? How are you making that presentation?
You know, there's a variety of data sources out there that you can use. There's, you know, AirDNA, there's Key Data, MassVisor, Revu, as a data provider. So there's a lot of different sites out there that you can use to go and look for data and kind of pull those. But, you know, if you're looking to help somebody acquire or manage a short-term rental, you know, ideally you have your own or you have or managing some others. And so you can give them some actual, you know, historical information from other properties that you manage.
I love that. So if you have a big enough portfolio, you can basically use your own data. I love that.
Yes.
And why? Because we always hear people that you know, that scale pretty big. They say, you know, focus on one thing. Why do y'all do all three? I mean, why not just focus on purchasing instead of just management and arbitrage? Why do you do that as well?
I ask myself that sometimes. you know, the reason we do it is to have more diversification across the portfolio. So there are, you know, there are positives and negatives to each of those three business models. We also do a digital only kind of management model. So we've got those basically four business models: owned, leased, full service management, and digital management. And we find that, you know, different ones of those models, you know, fit the needs of different partners. So it gives us some, you know, flexibility to work with multiple folks, and gives us a nice kind of diversification in our risk profile.
Love that.
And what's a good way? What's the best way it's worked for y'all to pick up a really potentially great arbitrage? Well, how do you talk to the owners?
In terms of what property we're looking for, or how we describe it to owners.
How do you you find a property that you think is going to do pretty good for you guys, and then you go reach out to the owner and say, hey, we want to arbitrage this. I mean, how do you get them to say yes?
You know, well, we've developed quite a bit of a track record, and so we can refer them to other people who've worked with us. That usually helps some. You know, we emphasize that we're, you know, not out, you know, throwing frat parties and everything, that's not, you know, kind of who we're catering to. And, you know, in an environment like this, it's actually easier now than it was a year ago, right? When everybody thought rents were going to continue to go up, 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 you know, and now landlords are starting to get a little bit more leery. And so the idea of having somebody who's going to pay guaranteed rent for 3 to 5 years is more attractive.
Oh, 3 to 5 year leases.
Yeah.
Wow.
You also said you were in the multifamily space. Have you touched the boutique hotel space?
We have, yes.
Okay. How are you liking that space?
Still early, but we think we're going to like it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, that's one space that I'm looking to get into, and I've always looked at it to have, you know, multiple units under one door, and it seems like you can cater to the, you know, have a better experience in that space. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, cool. No, there's definitely some benefits there.
Yeah.
And management, who do you manage? I mean, that's the same. So this is kind of like, that's, I mean, that's the best, I think, because you don't have to go in there and furnish the place, right? You just go in there, you find an owner of a house, or someone that's arbitraging, but that doesn't work too well that often. But you find an owner and you convince them that, hey, let us help you to furnish this place and turn it into a short-term rental. How do you do that?
I mean, honestly, you know, people typically seem to be pretty receptive to it. We haven't had a lot of problems. I mean, we have to get people, you know, again, comfortable that we're not going to tear the place up or anything like that. And we emphasize, you know, if there are bad reviews on the property, or, I mean, if there are, you know, problems with the property, it leads to bad reviews. Bad reviews lead to lower revenue, which makes it harder for us to make money. So, that's a little bit about how we, I don't know, we haven't had a huge problem with trying to convince folks. So.
Cool, man. It's been working out pretty smooth for you guys then. That's great.
Yeah.
Y'all even survived COVID pretty good, apparently.
We were very blessed for sure to make it through.
Yeah, because you. Oh, go ahead.
Oh,
go ahead, Steve.
How did you make it through COVID?
We just kept, we just kept on going, and kept renting the homes, and we filled the properties with more long-term stays when a lot of the, short-term traffic dried up. But, we just didn't quit. So.
Sound advice right there. What were you going to ask him, Micah?
Yeah, because I think earlier in the podcast, you said that you were actually picking them up during COVID, right?
We were, yes. We were adding more properties through COVID.
Woo! I mean, most people were slowing down during that time. What made you guys say, forget it, we're going to start picking up units? Most people were dropping units or, finding what struggling to get once I'm renting. What made you guys take that approach to pick up units?
Well, when other people are, when other people are buying is when you should sell, and when they're selling is when you should buy. So,
simple as that.
Simple as that.
So, cool,
Joe.
Yeah, we felt we could fill the space and, just took advantage of some, discounted pricing and ran with it.
Nice, man. Well, cool, Joe. Thank you for hopping on the show. This has been really, really interesting and inspiring how to scale, how to grow. I mean, God dang, you're going to have 750 units and your goal, and you make big goals too. Mine was like to get a couple more houses at the end of the year. You're going for, I want 1,000. I want 1,000 houses. That's, I should make my goals bigger. Maybe I'll accomplish more.
That's right. What's the great set? I don't even want to say it. That's it. Shoot for the moon, land among the stars, right?
There you go.
What are the days?
But isn't the moon closer than other stars?
Don't apply rationality to, that's the sort of thinking that's going to, you got to be like, no, the stars are closer than the moon.
Okay. Yeah, you can touch them. Oh, cool, man. Well, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you, Joe?
Go to www.patriotfamilyhomes.com. That's patriotfamilyhomes.com. Or you can shoot us an email at info@patriotfamilyhomes.com. And love to see if there's any way we can help you out.
Let's do it.
Awesome, brother. Well, thank you for hopping on, and good luck, and good Godspeed.
Yeah. All right. Fun on the anniversary dinner or birthday dinner.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah. Right. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
See you.
See ya.
All right. That was a good episode. 253.
Four. 254. Yeah, 254.
My bad.
That's all right. We've done so many of these damn episodes, we lose track.
Yeah, man. That's an interesting man. And man, that's killing it. Killing it.
Just even kill, just even kill dude.
For real?
Just straightforward. Yeah, I don't know. We just picked up more houses. Just okay. He's definitely if you're thinking like, okay, these guys are just interviewing gurus that are full of shit. You can tell this dude's, he's not exactly a guru. He's just out there doing it and just matter of factly doing
guru.
It. A duru. I like that.
Guru.
Yeah.
Shout out to my guy. What's my guy? The real estate guru. I loved him. I've been saying duru ever since he started saying that. So yeah, shout out to him. Yeah.
I mean, we've had people on this show that are, passionate as fuck and ain't done shit. It's just the facts. I'm just saying facts. And, and then he comes on we're going to get 1,000 properties by the end of the year. That's it.
For real, man.
I mean, it's not gonna make great Instagram reels and all that stuff, but it's gonna, he's just doing it.
Straightforward with it, man.
Putting the right people in place, sniping great talent,
Yeah, that was a good one right there. Yeah, sniping the talent off LinkedIn. That was a smart one right there.
That is cool, man. Joe, he recognizes he can't do it himself, and he's putting big goals together. So he's getting big people to accomplish big things. It's as simple as that.
Joe Riley, man. That was a good episode. He actually looks like Joe Burrow. Joe Riley looks like Joe Burrow. I was noticing that the whole time. I was going to say it, but I was like, never mind. But yeah, good episode, man. A cool way to scale your business, how to manage and arbitrage 500 plus Airbnbs in 4 years. Man, he's been doing it.
That is nuts, man. And it's funny because it automatically made me think like of these other teachers, whatever, gurus that have their courses and say, okay, step one, you got to pick one thing and stick with that and be the best at that, blah, 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 blah. But I've always been on the fence of that. You know, I'm like, okay, that sounds great just to do one thing. But what if a great, you know, these arbitrages come up and you're like, man, I could rent that thing for $1,000 a month. I know I'm going to make 3,000 on that thing. You know, what's wrong with picking that up? Especially if you already got a built in management system in your company, you know, that manages your multiple units. And then why not manage for other people? Hey, can you manage my properties? Let's see. Yeah, it looks like it's going to do pretty good. Sure. You already got that mechanism in place. Why not do these three things that have this synergy, right? So I don't see in that regard a reason you have to stick to one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely not. Whatever opportunity presents itself, man. If an opportunity comes knocking, be ready to answer. Just have the tool on your tool belt.
I mean, otherwise you'd become like a Dennis Rodman and just rebound.
Hey, but you're rebounding, getting rings. You can give me 20 boards. Keep rebounding, bro.
Now, if he was his own basketball team, it wouldn't be too successful. But he had Jordan on his team to make the buckets.
Ain't no basketball team successful with one dude.
Except for Durant's teams.
But, you know, hey, you got to play your part, man. But, yeah, man, that was a really good episode. I love the, you know, his drive. He's just straight laser focused, straight military focus, man.
Oh, yeah. We always find some good people to come on this show. I love it.
For sure, man. But for everyone out there listening, I don't know. I think this episode will probably drop before then. But next Thursday, May 18th, this has already dropped. Sorry you missed it. Thursday, May 18th, we are having another live recording session in Irvin, Texas. The tickets are in the bio. Click the link tree. You can grab your tickets if it's already passed. Oh, well, sorry. But yeah, go check that out. We're going to have a live podcast recording in Irvin. And then afterwards, we'll go out and have some dinner. Repeat with me. We are not buying you dinner. If you come, you can get some drinks, but we ain't buying you dinner. We'll have drinks there. We may have a few drinks and hors d'oeuvres, or hand food, as we call it. I ain't talking about a damn hors d'oeuvres, but some good hand food for you, some chips. And yeah, come through, kick it with us. And at the end of the show, you will be able to ask any questions you have about the show that was recorded or about any short-term rental things that you're running into. But yeah, definitely come kick it with us, hang out. You know, it's always a good time. Drinks. And food on you, but we'll go out and have some dinner after this.
Y'all can buy us dinner. You're always welcome to buy us dinner for all the knowledge.
No complaints.
Well, thank y'all for listening. LiveLetThrive.com, LiveLetThrive@gmail.com. We're going to do some more live events. We're going to do some more meetups. We're all over the socials now. We're finally, you know, we're tightening up our social game, and we're back on Clubhouse. You know, find us on Clubhouse every day. Yeah, man, we're out there. Find us, touch base with us, tell us your beautiful, wonderful stories, and connect with us, because we love to hear them. We love to give advice and just love to connect.
Yeah, and by the way, like what Steve said, we're on Clubhouse daily. Yeah, definitely go check out our 24/7 Clubhouse room. That's usually running mostly daily, right?
Every day, 24/7. All of our episodes. And this is just the beginning. We're gonna do some cooler, you know, real cool stuff with it. You're gonna have some chopped up, you know, many segments and stuff chopped up on there. We're gonna throw some, and we could throw some news on there too. Every now and then, me and Micah might just hop on there and start talking, say, hey, you guys, we're gonna do a meetup this week. Come check it out, you know. And there's gonna be the what's it called? The chat room's always open. Ask your questions in the chat room. Go to Live, Let, Thrive. And I call it right now, I'm calling the LLT pod 24/7. Submit questions, be a guest. So if you think you could be a great guest on the show, put it in the box. If you have some good questions for us, put it in the box. If we can't answer it, we'll find the answer for you.
Yes, sir. Let's go, man. LLT to the moon, landing on the stars. We are out.
Peace.
Later.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Live, Let, Thrive. Be sure to tune in next week for all the latest in the world of Airbnb and all that entails. Bye-bye.